I would like to do one more quick set of distinctions and then have you practice something. So another way that people indicate how they're processing information is through their what we call eye-accessing cues in NLP. The interesting thing about the way people move their eyes, the actual tissue of your eyes are an extension of brain tissue. They're directly connected to your brain. And so they can reveal a lot of information about how you're processing, sometimes we use the language how you're coding information by the way you move your eyes. So part of sensory acuity is noticing that when you ask somebody a question, or when you notice that they're thinking inside their head, so what do you look for when somebody's thinking? How can you tell that they're inside their head thinking as opposed to outside their head paying attention to something? Okay. So how would they be doing it?
They'll be looking at another direction. So they might be looking up.
Now, if somebody's just standing there thinking and they're going, are they probably paying attention to something outside of them or inside of them?
Inside.
Right? They're having thoughts, you know, and they're moving their eyes around in response to their thoughts. They might be looking at the pictures inside their head. Okay? They might be listening to the inner dialogue that they're going on. They're remembering a conversation of some kind. Maybe they're having feelings about something. And so it may be revealed in their eyes. So one kind of tracking, one way of paying attention is trying to assess, are they looking outside of themselves or are they inside themselves processing something? So one of the ways that we do that is you can ask people certain questions that presuppose that they are going to have to make a picture or hear something in order to answer the question. So if I were to ask you all, what is the color of the floor in your bedroom at home? Okay? Now, fascinating. Just watch everybody move your eyes, right? How many of you felt your eyes move when I asked the question? Okay? You felt your eyes move. So to answer the question, what did you have to do inside your head to answer it? You had to look, right? You had to look at their room and see what's the color to answer the question. How many of you got a nice clear picture of your bedroom? Okay? So you saw it. So if I ask a question like that, and people will, oftentimes they'll go, brown. Sometimes they'll go like this, they'll go, brown. So they'll look up, they'll see the picture of it in their mind, they'll say the word inside of their head, and then it'll come out of their mouth. Okay? So you ask a question and you watch how their eyes move, it can start to give you information about what they're doing inside their head to answer that question. So the patterns of eye movement, this chart is kind of a standard in NLP land about what we used to call normally organized right-handed people. We'll have a tendency that if they're looking up, they tend to be making pictures in their head. So those movements like you see like this or like this, that they're looking up, they tend to be making pictures inside their head. If they look side to side, so they're like looking at their ears, so they're going back and forth, let me take my glasses off, so they're going back and forth to the ears, directly side to side, that indicates auditory processing. If they're looking down, in general, like down and to the right or straight down, that likely indicates some kind of feeling or kinesthetic process. They're looking to their body for that information. Page 83, thank you. Down and to the left is internal dialogue. We use the distinction between analog and digital to describe certain aspects of our experience in NLP. So analog is anything that exists across the continuum. So you think of like a dimmer switch or a volume control. So it can be turned up or turned down, more intense or less intense. That's an analog shift. Digital is something that's on or off. So it's either present or absent. So that's when we say auditory digital, we're referring to somebody who's who's having internal dialogue. They're using words. So it's the presence of words to indicate that kind of thinking. So oftentimes internal dialogue will show up down here, down and to the left, when somebody's inside their head thinking. Outside of NLP, I'd have to look. I know that there have been studies on eye accessing cues, but I don't know if outside of NLP or not. I'd have to look at you. I would refer you to the NLPwiki.org site. That's where the main body of collection of NLP related research is. So that's where I would go to look it up to answer your question. Right. The story that I remember was that Robert Dilt, I can't remember if it was, I think it was John Grinder, made an assignment to his class, and Robert Dilt was there to find something that has no name and give it a name. Find something that has no name and give it a name. The other side of that exercise is find something that has a name and remove the name and see what you can discover about it. So if I look out there and there's a tree, if I take off the distinction of tree and go, what is, I don't even know what that is, and go out and discover it. So Grinder was, Dilt, get my NLP people all screwed up. So Dilt asked him, well, I'm not sure what you mean. What do you mean by that? And he said, well, you know, like something that has, that you don't have any name. And so Dilt was trying to think of something that has no name, and he was moving his eyes. And John says, yeah, something like that, like the way you're moving your eyes. Go figure out what that is. And so that, from that assignment, that's the story I remember about it. But I'm not sure of if it was Grinder or Dilt or who it was. But something like that, and that's where the distinctions came from. But the idea with this is, it's going to be helpful for you to think about this. So this is going to be consistent for many people. But it's not going to be true for all people. Some people, it's exactly reversed. For some people, it's going to be, and I haven't talked about the distinctions of construct versus remember yet, but it's going to be reversed from this, or it may be completely unique to them, to the person, that their accessing cues may be a completely unique pattern to them, but they will be consistent with their own pattern. And you can observe what that is, and then you can start to interact with it like you would with other people. So the distinction between construct and remember has to do with, if you've seen the picture before, if you're remembering it, so you look up and to your left, and if it's something you've seen before, you're using memory to access that picture. Like with the question about the color of the floor in your room. Looking up to the right, visual construct, so that's something, an image that maybe you haven't seen before. So if I asked you to think of your car painted green with yellow polka dots. Okay? No, and hell no. You know, but have you ever seen your car green with yellow polka dots before? So that you would have to construct that image somehow in your mind. So that's the distinction between remembered versus construct. So auditory remember would be something that you've heard before. So like if you were to recite your telephone number inside your head right now. Okay? And did you feel your eyes move when you did that? And you heard it inside your head. Or how many of you saw it? Some people saw it. I saw that you saw it. Okay? Mm-hmm. You pictured it inside your head. Okay? Auditory construct is you see something that you haven't seen before. I'm sorry, hear. Or hear something you haven't heard before. Like if you were to imagine the national anthem being sung by ants, what that would sound like. Now it's likely you've never heard that before, right? So that's the distinction between remembered versus construct. So do these distinctions make sense to you, the way they're listed? Do you have like a question or wondering about?
I did what you just asked us to do, and sometimes I was doing this what you would expect to do, like I turned to the right when I tried to hear the ad signal, call it to the constructor, so that worked. But when I reset my telephone number, I did kinesthetic look. So I did it wrong. I looked in the wrong direction. So maybe sometimes it's just, it's not always accurate probably. Or is
well, it? It's going to be always for you. Like you, maybe that's where your number is always stored.
Okay, so that's fine.
Yeah, so there's no wrong.
But I can't tell you're lying because you look up in the upper right corner.
Well, not really. Now, for example, when I worked in youth corrections, I got all excited about this. Like, oh, I can detect lies now. Okay. So what would happen is, for example, something would happen with the kids. They get in a fight or something like that. And so I start asking them, so what happened? Tell me what happened. And if they're doing a lot of this, okay, they've seen those pictures before, or they're doing this kind of a thing. They've seen that before. Okay. But if I get a lot of answers coming from over here, okay, you might wonder, you know, if he's making things up. He's not quite telling me exactly what happened. But I wouldn't say it's a reliable lie detector test because all it's really revealing is how they're thinking about something in the moment. So he might be having to think in his mind, how can I say this in a way that's not going to get me into trouble or something like that? There could be lots more going on inside the head to say lie or not lie. Is there?
I did the same thing with a phone number, and I noticed, I was up just to observe, as I noticed I was down in a study. But what I noticed then when I thought about, why is it kinesthetic? So I slowed down the process, I went into visual, saw the number, and then I went into kinesthetic as in dialing.
Oh, yeah.
So then is it just the phone number, or is it the actual phone number contacting, calling, which is a kinesthetic? So it can be broken down, and the brain processes so quickly, because when we call, we don't just look at a number, we actually go through and get the number and dial it. So we move very quickly through the process.
Thank you so much for saying that. I mean, that's so very true that, you know, the processing can happen so very quickly. So some of you might, for example, when I said, Think of your phone number. The first thing you might have done was repeated what I said to yourself. So that you, like, do I understand the instruction? Then you might have either seen it or heard it and then got a feeling, is it correct?
And I did the same thing with when you said the carpet in your bed. And I noticed I went down and I thought, huh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And then when I looked back to say, okay, I can see the carpet, even though I was looking back and I was watching, just observing myself, bring in the visual, and then that visual is the room, but to go into the room and then see it and feel it like I was there, I was down in cave. So I can bring in a vision to actually feel myself in the room, mm-hmm. and it went straight to cave. So I can bring it in and then feel the carpet, see the carpet, just quick.
That's some amazing awareness of your own internal process, you know? So, isn't that's one of the, again, with one of the themes of our training here, of understanding yourself better, is you can start noticing how quickly those representations happen in your mind. And start to observe in other people that, you know, if you ask certain questions and you watch how they're accessing, again, you don't know what they're thinking about, but can start to give you information for how they're thinking, which then we can use in lots of different ways. One of them is we're going to learn how to use our language to speak in the language that their brain is processing in the moment. Okay? So eye accessing cues. There's other indicators of visual, auditory, and kinesthetic processing. Breathing is another way. So when people are processing, and it's come up a couple of times already, when people are processing visually, their breathing tends to be higher in the chest. In contrast with kinesthetic, breathing tends to be much lower. So they're more belly breathing when they're in kinesthetically processing. Auditory processing is going to be somewhere between the visual and the kinesthetic. It's going to be more in the mid-range, the fullness of the chest area. So eye accessing cues, predicates, breathing, posture. So when people are processing more visually, they tend to be more upright. They might have their head tilted a little bit up as they're, you know, seeing the pictures up here. Shoulders tend to be straight across when they're processing visually. Kinesthetically, shoulders might be more relaxed and sloped as they're processing kinesthetically. Whereas auditory, the shoulders might be back, what we call sometimes in NLP the saxophone position. So their shoulders are pulled back a little bit as if you were playing the saxophone type of thing. Or they might have a slight tilt of the head that we talk say is the telephone position, as if they were on the phone. So they're like listening to something inside their head. These are all in the book, by the way. So if we have a page reference number. Which one? 25. So you have posture, you have breathing, you have predicates, you have eye accessing cues. So lots of, again, that idea that communication is redundant. People are communicating all the time how they're processing information. We want to be observant of that and then begin to make some discrimination about, okay, so if this person is processing more visually right now, it would probably be useful for me to use visual language as I'm speaking to them, because not only will it make it easier for them to understand what I'm saying, but it also makes it easier for them to accept what I'm saying. So when we get into the context of persuasion and influence, it's helpful because it makes it easier for them to receive the information if you've matched the modality in which they're thinking. Does that make sense? So let's do a little exercise here. What I'm going to have you do, and if I could borrow three people, come on up and we'll demonstrate this really quickly. And then I'll have you get into groups of three and practice. I know your tailbones would love it. Come on up. One more. So on page 29, there's some statements written there that, so this first statement here, everything is unclear. I want to see what's in store for us. So luckily for you, the sensory words are already bolded so that they stand out for you. So everything is unclear. I want to see what's in store for you. What processing would that indicate? Visual. So now you have some choices of response, A, B, C, or D, as to what would be the best match to respond to that statement with. So as an exercise, what I'm going to invite, say, Irma to be person A. So you get to read the top statement. So you just read it as if you were saying it. No, so you read.
Everything is unclear.
Uh-huh.
Everything is unclear. I want to see what is in store for us.
And our other two partners are going to alternate reading the responses back. And notice what it's like when you hear it. So does it feel, do you resonate with it? Does it seem understandable? Those kinds of things. So if you were to read A.
Let's clear away the fog so we can come to grips with our situation.
So if he responded back to you with that, so you're noticing, okay, what's it like for you? Doesn't make sense. Okay. And so if you would read the next one.
Sounds like you just can't hear yourself think.
Let me show you how to shine some light on our future.
Okay. So does that make sense?
Yes.
So the other two people were just going to alternate reading those responses back, and the person reading the statement gets to experience what it's like to receive that response. Now, I would encourage you as you're practicing this not to just read it, but read it as if you were really saying it. Okay? So read it like you mean it. Does that make sense as far as the exercise?
Actually, read it, have the sentence memorize, like right before you say it, and then say it without having to look down at your book. Because if you're looking down at your book, it's not going to work right. So just look at the sentence, memorize it in a few seconds, and then say it. That's
good. Right. The other nice thing about that, too, is you can pay attention to the person's response. As you make that statement, you can see, you can use your visual acuity to see how they're going to receive it.